North Hospital, dear friend.
Lady Friedman, the back of the room was always, whenever there are representatives of lenders that come, Rabbi Friedman at their side, and always chazik them and everybody else. It's a great chiz for us to hear from Rabbi Marcus. Rabbi Marcus, I have this chiz known for many, many years, probably close to 20 years. That's how young he is. And he is very young, Baruch Hashem. And he's an outstanding Talmid Chacham. Doesn't need my haskama at all, but he's an outstanding Talmid Chacham. Back in the day, back in my day when I was growing up, he was already a rising star. Taught for many years at NYU. A few years ago, Landers decided that they saw Baruch Hashem great talent and great Chachma, which they wanted to have share with Talmidim, and this is the second year teaching and giving a shir in Landers College. He also has a Rebbe shul in Queens. There's some people in the city of Queens, people on the hills, a shul called Isha Yisrael, a very beautiful kehillah in Queens, and it's a great school. It's just one more introduction. The theme of the month, as some of you may have heard or may not, is practical mitzvahs, tzitzis, tefillah, and the like. So without too much notice, we gave Rabbi Marcus the first crack at a discussion of such mitzvahs. Tzitzis, I think, will be on his agenda for today, at least part of it. And it's a great tzuchus and kavod to hear from Rabbi Shmuel Marcus.
Thank you, Rabbi Yudin. Shoshan Goldschmidt. It's great to be here, great to see and speak with you guys. Everything in life depends on perspective. Consider for a moment, anyone here from Detroit? And Detroit, Michigan guys here? No? Yes? I guess not. Yes? Okay. The DIA is the Detroit Institute of Arts, a museum in Detroit. A few years ago, they had a tour of school-age students to the museum, and they showed off their prized painting, a painting called The Bay, painted by an American painter. Her name is Helen, and the last name is, anybody know?
Tess.
Okay. Close. I was almost impressed. This painting is worth $1.5 million, and everyone's walking by, ooing and eyeing, and this school student walks by, and as he too passes by, he simply takes the chewing gum out of his mouth, sticks it on the canvas, and walks on by. And the DIA was then scrambled to find out how to remove the stains left on canvas by Wrigley's gum. Very, very traumatic event in the art world. Everyone looks at the same painting. To some people, it's a work of art, masterpiece, you ooh and ah. To someone else, it's a place to stick my chewing gum on after I'm done. It's all perspective. And I use that as an introduction to the mitzvah of tzitzis, simply because tzitzis is also a question of perspective. By that I mean the purpose of tzitzis, the Torah tells us, u'ra'isem oso u'zachartem. It's all about looking at it, and then what happens? What do you see when you look at it? To some people, you look at it, you see just a bunch of white strings. To others, you look at it, and you see the lavan, the tcheles, you remember kisei hakavod, shamayim, v'zachartem es kol mitzvos Hashem v'asisem osam. It's a spiritual motivator. I wanted to, with your permission, just to talk a little bit about the re'iyah of tzitzis. Looking at tzitzis. Where does it come up in halacha, most practically? Perhaps we hear it often discussed is with regard to the difference in practice as to whether one wears the tzitzis strings out visibly or whether they are worn under one's clothing, out of sight. Various customs, different places, different people. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Ches, Siv Yud Aleph, Shulchan Aruch says, Iker mitzvahs talis katan, lelobsho al begadav, kedei shetamid yireihu v'yizkor hamitzvos. That the main mitzvah, for the best performance of the mitzvah of talis katan, is to wear it on top of your clothing, so that you should always see it, and thereby remember the mitzvos. And if you look in the Mishnah Berurah speaks very harshly against the practice of many who wear their tzitzit strings inside their pants, they tuck them in. Mishnah Berurah is very harshly critical of that practice. He says, after all, this is a gift from Melech Malchei Hamlochim. How could you be embarrassed to display it? It should be a source of pride. So writes the Mishnah Berurah. And he actually writes, Asir Litin Es Adin. Those who wear the tzitzit tucked in will have to answer for that one day in the Beis Din Shalmala. And yet, there are, and there have been, numerous individuals who have the practice to wear their tzitzis inside their clothing. Not exposed, not visible. In fact, of Moshe Feinstein, I was told by Reuven Feinstein, was of the opinion that the Mishnah Berurah is speaking only about the scenario discussed by the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, you wear the talis katan on top of your clothing to remember the mitzvos. So on that, says the Mishnah Berurah, if you're beged, if the talis katan itself is on top of your clothing, then don't tuck the strings in. But if the beged itself is under the clothing, as we generally wear it ourselves, then says Rav Moshe Feinstein, there is no requirement to wear the strings out. Yet this is again a machlokes amongst the Achronim. If you look, for example, in the Maharshal and the Levush, they had the practice, even when their beged was under the clothing, to wear some strings out to always be able to see the tzitzis. If you look in Shalsa Tshuvas Mahari Bruno, one of the late Rishonim, he says it depends on who you are and where you are. Sometimes for some people in some places, if you wear your tzitzis out, it's going to look like you're trying to show off. But if the practice where you are is that people wear the tzitzis out generally, so wearing it out is the norm. Nothing wrong with that. Might depend on who you are and where you are. Difference in minhag depending on who the person is and what the minhag hamakom happens to be. So various opinions whether the tzitzis are wearing out or wearing in. The Magen Avraham quotes the Arizal, who says, Al Pi Kabbalah, one is supposed to wear the tzitzis under their garments, under their clothing. So again, Al Pi Kabbalah perhaps to wear them in, Al Pi Nigla, difference in minhag. So in that regard, with the mitzvah of Ureisim, also seeing the tzitzis, a difference in minhag whether you wear the strings in or out. So let me ask you, according to those who say you wear them in, what does Ureisim also mean? It's Pasuk in Chumash. What do you make of that? Yeah? Bizman tefila. Why bizman tefila? During Kriya Shema Yimi. Oh, very good. So the Bala Itzer says that the minog to gather tzitzis together during Kriya Shema, like you just pointed out, says the Bala Itzer, one of the Rishonim, is because since many have the minog to wear it under the clothing, he writes, so when else are you going to be Mekayim Uri Isim also? So the Itzer himself says, well, when you put it on, at least then you see the tzitzis. That for sure is sufficient. But he adds, he says that the minhag to gather the tzitzis together during Kriya Shema stems from this concern, that if you wear the tzitzis under your clothing, you don't see it so much during the day, so during Kriya Shema you have that ability and opportunity to see the mitzvahs, to see the tzitzis then, and be mekayim or isim also. Yet, interestingly, even that is a subject of dispute, to wear the tzitzis, to take the tzitzis during Kriya Shema or not. That also is a machlokas amongst the Gaonim and the Rishonim. Some held that collecting the tzitzis together during Kriya Shema is also mechze kiyura, it's like showing off. That was Rav Natronoi Gaon's opinion. Others, Shulchan Aruch himself, passing, said, no, the one is supposed to gather the tzitzis together during the recital of Kriya Shema. And Simon Chaf Dalet, the Shulchan Aruch writes that it is a mitzvah. Lechos hatzitzis biatzmalis. It's a mitzvah to hold the tzitzis in one's left hand. Keneged libo, near one's heart. Bishas kriyashma, when one recites kriyashma. And then he adds, in Sif Gimel, Tov lehistako betzitzis, bishas atifa kishamavarech. It's preferable to look at the tzitzis when you put them on. And in Sif Dalet, yesh noagin lehistako betzitzis, kishamagim lereisim oso. Some look at the tzitzis when they get to that phrase in Shema, over reisim oso. And then even, Meshur Chanoch adds, even to place the tzitzis over one's eyes. I'm sure you perhaps have seen that. Maybe not as common in this room, but there are those that have that practice of putting the tzitzis over their eyes when they say Uri'isim or so. That's quoted in Shulchan Aruch as a minag yafeh, as a nice custom, a nice practice. So the mitzvah of Uri'isim also is the source of one discussion whether one should wear tzitzis out or not. Some, as I said before, paskin one should wear the tzitzis out to better see the tzitzis on a more frequent, regular basis. Other achronim say that no, you're mekayim the mitzvah or isim also when you put it on. But this is also the source of the practice of gathering the tzitzis during Kriyat Shema and looking at the tzitzis when you say Uri Isim also during Kriyat Shema. Okay, so two relevant applications of the mitzvah of Re'iya, of seeing the tzitzis. There is an additional question that is raised, however. That minog of gathering the tzitzis during Kriyat Shema. So we saw it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Chaf Daled. That's a mitzvah to hold the tzitzis in one's left hand. Shulchan Aruch, we said, writes, it is even customary to look at the tzitzis when you say your isim also. How many of the tzitzis? Which ones? What is the minhag? Anybody familiar?
Two
fronts? Or all four? If you look in the Shulchan Aruch in Sif Hei writes that when you look at the tzitzis, and he's referring to taking the tzitzis and looking at them during Kriyat Shema, he says, look at the front two tzitzis. Why dafka the front two? What would the reason for that be? Why dafka the front two?
They're visible.
I'm they're most visible, in front of you. More than that, that's correct. More than that, the Vilna Gaon is cited as having instructed his Talmud Muvak, Reb Chaim of Elazhin, that one should dafka look at only the front two and not collect in his hand the back two. He just said that's even problematic. Why? Because the purpose of tzitzis, the way you wear it, is dafka two in front, two in back. You should be surrounded by tzitzis. And when Lagon writes, or it's quoted in his name, that he felt that even during Kriyat Shema you should have dafka two in front, two in back. Don't put all four in front, that's not correct. Have dafka two in front and dafka two in back. So when we go to instruct the Chaim of Lashon to dafka during Kriyat Shema, take only the front two tzitzis, not the back two. Yet, al pi Kabbalah, here again, the Arizal is cited as having said that one is supposed to take all four tzitzis in hand. This is cited within the Kata Chaim, it's not in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's quoted b'shem the Arizal, that during Kriyat Shema one takes all four tzitzis in one's hand, not just the front two. Okay, so difference again of opinion. Arizal, all four tzitzis in one's hand during Kriyat Shema, that was the minhag of the Stipler, the Vilna Gaon, the Chazon Ish, all the front two tzitzis in one's hand during Kriyat Shema. What might this difference in minhag depend upon? So I saw a very fascinating suggestion. There's an incredible, incredible psak of the smak. Anybody familiar with the smak?
Yeah.
Yeah? What is it?
Rambam. Right?
So there's the smak is Sefer Mitzvos HaKatan. The smag is Sefer Mitzvos HaGadol. The Rambam is one of the earlier Sefer Mitzvos. But the smak was written by one of the Balei HaTosfos. He lists and counts all 613 mitzvos. And one of his mitzvos that he counts is the mitzvah of Uri Isim also. If you stop for a second, think about that. It's an incredible, astonishing fact. According to the smak, you get a mitzvah d'oraisa. Every time you look at your tzitzis, Uri Isim also is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Doesn't cost you anything. Doesn't take any effort. All it means is you have to look at your tzitzis and your mekayim mitzvah d'oraisa or isim also. Pretty incredible fact. Mitzvahs don't come that much more easily than that. Or isim also mitzvah d'oraisa according to the smak. Every time you look at your tzitzis, mitzvah d'oraisa. Others disagree. The Shalos Chuvos or Yivash says, what are you talking about? It's one of the 613? No, it's not. What is it then? Doesn't the Pasuk say or isim also? Why would it not be a mitzvah? In fact, no one else counts it as a mitzvah. Ram doesn't count it as a mitzvah. Why not? Pasuk says it. What's the pshat? Why would it not be a mitzvah?
It's the specification of the mitzvah sittings.
Meaning?
Meaning it's all under the same...
Oh, very good. You're saying tzitzis is the mitzvah. One of the components of the mitzvah of tzitzis is to see it. Good, very good. That is one pshat that's given. But even according to that pshat, you're saying it is a mitzvah, just subsumed under the broader mitzvah of tzitzis. That's very good. The Rivash, however, argues it's not a mitzvah at all. How could that be? Why would that be a mitzvah at all? It's in the pasuk, orisim or so. How do you mean the pasuk? What's pshat in the pasuk? It's not a mitzvah at all. What is it? Yeah, what do you think?
Included in the regular mitzvah?
That's the pshat we just said over here. You said this. What's your name?
Michael.
Michael. It's Michael's pshat. That's very good. If you don't say it's a mitzvah, it's not a mitzvah at all. What's pshat in the pasuk? Barisim or so.
Someone else should see it.
Someone else should see it.
Or eat them. They'll see it.
Plural. So that means it's a mitzvah for me to see your tzitzis then?
Sure.
Okay, but if you see it's not a mitzvah at all, what's the pshat in the pasuk then?
Maybe the mitzvah is to remember the mitzvah. So
correct.
The pasuk. So it's uchart and kolins wasabi. It's the mitzvah isn't seeing them, seeing them is a tool in which to complete the mitzvah.
Ah, very good. You said the reason for the mitzvah is to see it to bring you to remembrance.
Yeah.
Correct. That is the pshat of the Rivash. Very good, Michael. The pshat of the Rivash is the reason for it's not a mitzvah, it's the purpose of the mitzvah. It's the reason for the mitzvah. Wear it so that you can see it. When you see it, hopefully you'll jog your memory to motivate yourself to perform mitzvah Hashem. So this notion of reisim also, which is, again, the source of the discussion whether you have to wear the tzitzis out over the course of the day, or whether seeing it when you put it on is enough. This is also the source of the discussion of the minhag to hold the tzitzis in one's hand when saying Kriya Shema, or reisim also. That very phrase is a machlokas, the smak and the rivash. Is it a mitzvah d'oraisa to see the tzitzis? Or no, the mitzvah is to wear the tzitzis. The reason also is the reason for the mitzvah. Wear it so you'll see it. If you see it, you'll remember to do the mitzvah of Hashem. So with that machlokas in mind, some suggest maybe that explains the difference in minhag during Kriya Shema. Two tzitzis or four? What do you guys do during Kriya Shema? What's the majority vote here? Two tzitzis or four? Okay, that helped. All right, either way. The minhag of two versus the minhag of four, what should it depend upon? If you say the pasuk of reisim also is a mitzvah d'oraisa, one of the tarayag, the pasuk says, put tzitzis on your beged, and the mitzvah is not just to put it on your beged and to wear it, but the mitzvah is also to see it. If that's from the pasuk, what is the pasuk referring to when it says, see the tzitzis? All four. The mitzvah is put on all four, wear all four, and see all four. So then, of course, that's pshat, according to the smak, the minhag and kriya shma should be to take all four. But if you hold like the rivash, that the purpose of a reisim is not because that's a mitzvah, but rather the mitzvah is to wear tzitzis. What's the reason of the mitzvah? The seeing is the reason of the mitzvah, it's the purpose of the mitzvah, not the mitzvah per se. So then, whatever reminds you and jogs your memory, seeing any of the tzitzis should be sufficient as well. If that's the pshat, then perhaps you can argue that the minute to take two of the tzitzis, not four, is because reason is not a mitzvah, but rather it's what?
It's like a tool.
It's the tool, it's the purpose, it's the goal. Just to remind you, it's a means through which you're reminded to do mitzvahs. Okay, so seeing two versus seeing four makes no difference. You're reminded either way to do mitzvahs of Hashem. So that might be the pshat in the minute to take two tzitzis, because if you were isim, so not as a mitzvah d'oraisa, but rather as a tool in reminding yourself to do the mitzvah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then even seeing two should be sufficient. So that's the discussion of the minhag and the halacha of arisim also. But what is the broader purpose of arisim also? If you wanted to discuss it from a hashkafic perspective, clearly, arisim also is not just to look thoughtlessly, mindlessly at tzitzis and then move on with life. Arisim also, both the Sfas Emes writes, the purpose of arisim also is liftoach einei ish Yisrael, to open up our eyes, to give us a different perspective on life. If you look in the Ruach Chaim, the Chaim of Elazin, his parish on Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah says, Histaka b'shlosha devarim ve'ena tabale de'avero. Look at three things to avoid sin. Da me'ayin basa, remember where you came from. Well, that's a whole where you're going to end up. Remember who you have to give an accounting to for your actions in this world. Says the Chaim of Elazhin, three histaktus mentions, three perspectives mentioned in the Mishnah. Where you came from, where you're going, and who you have to answer to. And three times the Pasuk speaks of the word tzitzis in the parasha of tzitzis. Says Reb Chaim of Elazhin, the wearing of tzitzis is to remind you of that purpose in life. Where you came from, where you're going, and remember you have to answer for everything you do. Tzitzis, Chaim of Elazhin says, is all about perspective. The Re'iyah is supposed to motivate a different, clear perspective of life. What's interesting, as Hanukkah is still in our rearview mirror, now this famous Maimar Chazal, he's supposed to put the Hanukkah menorah ideally where? Outside, where? By the left of the doorpost, and the right, says the Gemara, is what? Is the mezuzah. Hanukkah on the left, mezuzah on the right. The Sfasemis quotes a nusach in the Gemara found in the Bala Itter that ends with the following phrase, Ner Hanukkah mismol mezuzah miyamin u'bal bayis be'emtza mu'utaf betalis. The Bala Bayis is in the middle, wearing his talis. I wonder if there's the connection of talis and tzitzis to Ner Hanukkah on the left and mezuzah on the right. The Sfasemis suggests that the purpose of Ner Hanukkah is to motivate one, and that motivation, that inspiration stays with you, and perhaps that, he suggests, is the association to wearing one's talis even beyond the lighting of the Neros of Hanukkah. In what way is there an association between the two? Perhaps because the Sfasemis writes that Hanukkah also is all about a clear perspective. Sfasemis writes beautifully, he says that the Neros of Ner Hanukkah, he says, we said Neros Halalu, Ein Lono Rishos L'Shtamash Behem El R'osim Bilvad. You have to see the Neros Hanukkah, nothing else. Why, says the Sfasemis, the mitzvah is to see Ner Hanukkah, because Ner Hanukkah is Meir L'Kol Nefesh Yisrael. It illuminates our perspective, that we should be able to see, to have a proper perspective on life. And he quotes that same Mishnah Perkei Avos. Histaka b'shlosha dvarim. Know where you're coming from, know where you're going, know who you're going to answer to. It's all a question of perspective, says the Sfasemis. Now, Chanukah is about perspective. Tzitzis or Issim is always about clear perspective on life, how you see life around you. Make it a little more specific. Sfasemis writes that the perspective that Ner Hanukkah is supposed to illuminate is all about Hoda'ah, giving thanks to Kadosh Baruch Hu. What is thanks? What is Hoda'ah? Purpose of Ner Hanukkah is Hoda'ah, Hallel and Hoda'ah. What does Hoda'ah mean? Sfasemis says Hoda'ah means that you're able to look at what appears to be a very tragic or unfortunate event in life, and you're able to see it from a perspective that this too is Tov V'Chesed. Now Hanukkah says the Sfasemis illuminates our perspective, our vision of life, so that you see that which looks to be somewhat tragic or unfortunate, you see it from a different perspective. You see it as Tov V'Chesed. Give you an example. A month ago, there was a fellow stabbed by an Arab in Rishon LeZion. His name is Daniel Cohen of Bnei Brak. Like every other stabbing, unfortunately, in recent months, was reported on and then subsequently forgotten. His stabbing, however, had a postscript to it, which was reported on a few weeks ago, that after he was operated on for 4 hours to repair the damage to his intestines, the doctors came out and told him that we just discovered a tumor growing in your intestines that would have threatened your life had we not discovered it. Took it out, you'll be okay. And so he later, when interviewed, told everyone the stabbing saved my life. Now obviously that's a rare instance of someone capable of seeing that which is lo tov as tov v'chesed. But he is someone who had a different perspective on that which is near a lo tov. The illumination of his perspective on life changed his perspective dramatically. Another example. I had a woman in my shul whose grandmother, or was it grandfather, one of her grandparents, was a Jewish refugee from Germany during the years before World War II. This grandfather, I think it was, had fled to Britain. And after the outbreak of World War II, he was imprisoned by the British in a concentration camp of sorts for German refugees. Perhaps not so well known. You have definitely heard of the Japanese Americans who were interned in isolated camps in America during World War II. In Britain, when the war broke out, any German-born and German-raised immigrant to Britain was herded into a refugee camp or an internment camp and locked up for fear of espionage concerns. And many Jews who had fled Germany in the last years before the war now found themselves locked up in British internment camps. And this woman in my shul, her grandfather was one of those. The British subsequently herded together hundreds of these German Jews who had fled Germany for presumed safety in England and shipped them off to Australia on a ship called the Dunera. Anyone ever heard of the ship, the Dunera? Dunera? No? Heard of it?
Yeah.
Familiar with the story?
Yeah.
Yeah? Most guys familiar with the story?
Mm-hmm.
Some yes, some no, most not. Okay. Mention it quickly for the guys who have not heard it. If you read the book on the story, there's a book written by got the name of the author. But survivors of that journey recounted how the British sailors were drunken anti-Semites, used to smash beer bottles on the deck of the ship and make the Jewish refugees run across the deck of the ship barefoot. They locked them up downstairs below decks with no bathrooms, only buckets that were overflowing with raw sewage. And when the ship turned and swayed on the seas, the sewage overflowed. These people were sleeping on the floors, weren't given any beds, any cots. They're living in miserable subhuman conditions. And to make matters worse, the British sailors confiscated their passports, their family pictures, their family albums, their family letters. Whatever mementos they had of their family in Germany were confiscated and thrown overboard into the ocean. And it was only after the war, when a German naval officer published his memoirs in a book called SOS, Rettete unsere Seelen, Save Our Sailors, in German. And he recounted how his submarine, his U-boat, was tracking a British transport ship across the ocean and was planning on sinking the ship when they saw through periscope depth that there were some items from the ship thrown overboard. And when they surfaced to recover those items, they found German letters, German photos, German mementos, and they figured that this ship was transporting German prisoners of war from Britain to Australia. They decided to leave the ship alone. That was the memoirs of this German submarine commander. So in retrospect, if you were a Jew on that ship who sees what happens to him as being lo-tov, and yet years later you recognize Mashal Yair lo-tov was really tov v'chesed. A difference in perspective once again. Look at this week's parasha. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Yaakov, don't be afraid of going down to Mitzrayim. Anochi Eirim Chametzrayim, Anochi Alpha Gamalo, the Yosef Yoshes Yodo Aleinecha. Don't be afraid, says God to Yaakov. Go down to Egypt. I'll go with you. I'll bring you back up. And Yosef will put his hands over your eyes. What does that last phrase mean? Yosef put his hands over your eyes? What does that mean? Pashup Shah. Pasuk HaKomish. What does it mean? Anybody know? Yosef will put his hands over your eyes. What does that mean? Is that like a cool thing, to put your hands over someone else's eyes? What's the promise here? Anybody know? What's the chat? Yeah?
He's going to see Yosef before he dies.
So why not say, Yosef will be there, you'll see Yosef. Why Yosef will put his hands over your eyes?
Peaceful death.
Oh, so one shot is, and this is some of the Farshim point out, that Yosef will close your eyes after your death. That was the custom, that those present at time of death would close the nifter's eyes. That's a good shot. That's one shot mentioned. Meshechachma says the following. Meshechachma suggests Yosef Yashis Yoda Alei Necha, meaning, don't try to figure out why going down to Mitzrayim is in your best interests and why it's in Klal Yisrael's best interests. You can't always foresee ahead of time Hashgachas Hashem and why it's happening. But just like Yosef went down and initially it seemed tragic, but now he's the ruler of all of Eretz Mitzrayim, saving Klal Yisrael from hunger. Yosef Yashis Yoda Alei Necha says Meshech Chachma, he will cover your eyes as if to show you that you can't see or foresee the benefits of that which happens, that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes on you, but have in mind, have trust and faith that it's for the best of you and your family. So that's one clarity of perspective. However, the lesson of the menorah and of tzitzis might be as well that perspective means not just seeing the bad as good, but even seeing that which we take for granted as good. Also a challenge. Great story written up by Gene Weingarten in the Washington Post back in 2007. Have you heard this one? No? Not yet? Alright, I'll tell you the story then. Gene Weingarten is a Jewish reporter for the Washington Post. He was fascinated by the... How many New Yorkers here? New York City subway system? Yeah, when you travel the subways, what are you treated to while you're waiting for the subways? What's that? Besides the rats, what else? Huh? Free music. Musical concerts on the subway platforms in New York City subways, all the time. Not the best of music, but music nonetheless. So, apparently DC subway system in Washington, the same thing is somewhat commonplace. Guys playing for some spare change. You know, briefcase open on the floor, playing away on their violin or their guitars, their drums, whatever else I'm making a racket with, and hoping for a few bucks here or there. So Gene Weingarten decided to perform a social experiment. He brought on board Joshua Bell. Joshua Bell is who? Hear the story?
Yeah.
Good story, no? I hope. Okay. Joshua Bell. One of the world's best classical violinists, a guy who makes $1,000 a minute when he's performing in concert. It's a pretty decent salary, $1,000 a minute every time he plays. World's top classical violinist. And Weingarten brings him on board, dresses him up in a t-shirt, pair of jeans, and a baseball hat, and he hauls along with him his Stradivarius violin, Italian-made in 1713, worth $3.5 million. Pretty cool violin. And he comes into the Washington, D.C. subway system, sits down by the platform, and plays his heart out, 45 minutes straight. Bach, Schubert, world's top violinist, playing the most beautiful classical music. This guy gets paid $1,000 a minute for these kinds of performances. He plays 43 minutes straight, nonstop. Free concert, the best of its kind in the world. 1,097 people walk by. About 27 stopped for more than a minute. He made $32. The rest of the 1,075 people, whatever it was, 70 people, just walked by without even pausing for more than a minute to stop and listen to the world's best classical violinist playing free concert classical music. Okay, some guys are late for work. Fine. Okay, maybe. Nonetheless, the lesson being clearly, the most beautiful blessings in life are sometimes just unnoticed, unappreciated. Because if you're like anything else, yeah, this happens every day. Some guy playing violin in the subway system, nothing special. Take it for granted, you don't appreciate it. Says the Sfas Emes, the illumination from the Neros of Chanukah, the perspective you're supposed to have, that you take with you post-Chanukah, is to appreciate the gifts and brachas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us in life as well. He writes, to illuminate the choshech, the darkness, perhaps he refers to the choshech of Teva, that which veils us from appreciating the blessings in life. I'll leave you off with one last possible change in perspective to think about. This week's parasha, when Yosef reveals his identity to the brothers, the brothers could not respond because why? They're so just horrified. Says the famous Medrash, Ayilanu miyom hadin, Ayilanu miyom hatokecha. Woe is to us from the day of judgment, the day of rebuke. What was this add a rebuke to the brothers of Yosef, aside from the obvious? Says the Sfasemes, the brothers suddenly saw Yosef, who was able to maintain his kedusha, his purity, his tzidkus, even in the immoral melting pot of Mitzrayim. They looked back at how they perceived him as a na'ar when they sold him. Ah, he's a chayv misa, he's a rodev, he's just a kid, pesasa v'sara, he's just looking in the mirror, making himself look pretty all day long. They didn't appreciate who he was. Now they see him as an ish kadosh. Haralahan shuhu mahul. He showed them he still had his bris mila. Kipi hamadabra aleichem. He's still speaking Lashon HaKodesh. Says the Chasam Sofer, he maintained his kedusha. They were shocked. This is the kid we so underrated. We so misjudged him. This is an ish kadosh. Says Rav Pam beautifully. We look at people and we look at ourselves. We underrate ourselves. We misjudge ourselves. We think that we too are just a nar. Ah, we're just simple people, simple Jews, into the simple pleasures of life. And sometimes we'll come, ultimately based in Shamala, Yom HaTochecha, day of rebuke, means such a palm, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us who we really were, how much potential we really had, how much kedusha we really had, how much we could have accomplished had we tried a little bit harder. That's the ultimate Yom HaDin, Yom HaTochecha. Not what we've done wrong, but how much more we could have done right. That's also a clarity of perspective that we have to adopt. So when you look at the tzitzis, when you look around you, when you look at life in general, it's all a question of perspective. What do you see? Just white strings or opportunities for growth in your Shemaim and Avodas Hashem? Do you see just a na'ar? Do you think of myself as a na'ar and salsa basara of the mouth anything big? Or do you see someone who has potential for incredible kedusha and incredible growth in Avodas Hashem? Havayu should all be zochet to maximize our potential to the fullest, to see not just the statistics but life in general from a clear perspective, to take with us the illumination of the menorah of Hanukkah even beyond the days of Hanukkah, and to see life the way it really should be seen for an Ovid Hashem. Thank you guys for coming, listening. Happy to take any questions about anything under the sun. Personal questions I might fail to answer, but that's up to you to try. But or anything else you want to choose about in person or in public, happy to do so. You want to speak now, you want to ask now, ask later, whatever you like. Yes?
What's the din about wearing tzitzis without an undershirt?
Excellent question. Wearing tzitzis without an undershirt. I asked Reuben Feinstein that question a few years ago. He told me Moshe held that it was not a problem at all. He said of Moshe passing that it was permissible, and he did not think it was a bizayon. I know that some are concerned there might be a bizayon because you're sweating, you're schwitzing. I know that in my days in Marsha Kola, Rav Willig, when he was playing sports, he used to take his tzitzis off. He didn't feel it was appropriate to get it all verschwitzed while he was playing ball. But Rav Moshe held that in general it was not a bizayon to have tzitzis on your skin directly. Yes?
The source of having tzitzis being put in your pockets?
The source of?
Like, people wear tzitzis and they put it in their pockets.
Put in their pockets. Good question. The Magen Avraham writes that tzitzis should not be stuck into the corner of the beged, right? The corner of your beged, of your talis katan, is a little square stitched onto your beged usually. Apparently, once upon a time, those stitches were open. People would stick their strings inside that little pocket. So Magen Avraham says that should not be done. He quotes the Gemara Ein Tzitzis Ela Yotze, that the strings are supposed to hang down. He writes that if one is amongst Goyim and one is afraid of the tzitzis being seen by the Goyim who might react aggressively to it, then you can stick it into the little pocket of the tzitzis beged to avoid any confrontations with the Goyim. But you're asking more about the pockets of one's pants, I assume, correct? So there, the tzitzis are coming out, hanging down from the tzitzis beged. So that would not be a problem of Ein Tzitzis Aliyotze, as Magen Avraham mentioned. That would be permissible. Why is it done? I presume it's done because people want to see the tzitzis in Kiyum of Ru'isim also, like those tzitzis that hold supposed to be visible and out throughout the day. But at the same time, they probably just don't want it flapping around and getting in the way. So they figure this is a neat way just to keep it in one place. Variations on that would be the wrapping around of one's belt, which Rav Shachter writes in Nefesh Rav was what Rav Lichtenstein used to do. Rav Shachter quotes that when they asked the Rav about it, he said that Rav Chaim apparently did something along those lines as well. I assume it's just a question of preference. Once you're wearing it out, how out do you want to wear it, flapping, not flapping, and how to keep it from flapping? That's what I assume is the shot. Yes?
Should one wear tchelis nowadays?
Excellent question. Tchelis nowadays is obviously a source of a contemporary dispute. Rav Shechter Shlita is in favor of wearing tchelis, and he writes that, worst case scenario, you're not doing anything wrong by wearing tchelis. And on the flip side, if it is right, then you're fulfilling mitzvah d'oraisa as required. So Rav Shechter writes that suffik d'oraisa l'chumra, it's a suffik, whether this is a kiyum of the mitzvah d'oraisa tchelis, and one should wear tchelis. That is Rav Shechter's psak. Others are in disagreement. Rav Yashiv has a tshuva to Rav Shraga Feivel Cohen of Brooklyn, in which he writes that he does not think that one should wear tchelis. The reason for that, he writes, is because, first of all, he says, tchelis is not a new thing. It was first discovered, quote-unquote, by the Radzina Rebbe in the 1800s. And the Radzina Rebbe was convinced he had found tchelis, which was some dye from some squid that he had extracted. And he was later disproven. So Yashiv says, number one, who says that this Murex trunculus tchelis will not be disproven one day? That's one time Rav Yashiv has. Secondly, he writes, is Machlokas Rashi Rambam, whether when you cook the dye of the tchelis, you boil the dye of the tchelis, is it supposed to be mixed with other ingredients in the big pot in which you're boiling it? Or is it just the extracted dye alone that you're boiling up? Machlokas Rashi Rambam. Rashi says you put just the tchelis dye itself but in the pot, nothing else. Rambam says you mix it with other, some money, mix it with other ingredients as well to make the dye perfect. So Rav Yashiv says, how can you paskin like Rashi Rambam? We don't know who is correct. We don't know how to properly make the dye. So even if the Murex trunkless snail is a right, correct snail, Rav Yashiv says we don't know how to prepare the tchelis dye properly. So therefore he advises against wearing tchelis. Rav Shlomo Miller of Toronto also wrote a tshuva against it based on, number one, the concern he has that it's no different than Kala Elon, which is a dye that the Gemara speaks of as not being tchelis. And secondly, he writes, Suffolk device l'chumra would not apply if even after doing it you're not sure you've done the mitzvah yet. Suffolk device l'chumra, Rav Chaim apparently said, is only when, if you do it, you will for sure have avoided all doubts. Here, even after you do it, you're still not sure that you've avoided all doubt. And one last time that those who are against it marshal in their favor is the Shulchan Aruch, which says that the color of the string should be the same color as the beged, which is white usually, and white beged. Whereas if you're in tchelis, then the color of some strings is blue, not white. Okay, so again, either side of the equation, you have the Gdol Torah who are in favor or are against. Rav Shechter in favor. Rav Yashiv apparently was against. So yes, yesh v'yesh. There are those who do stuff, those who don't, and there's posts on both sides. Yeah.
What's the difference between wool versus cotton versus mesh?
Good question as well. Wool is a mitzvah d'oraisa. To put tzitzis on. So if you have a beged made out of wool, you're chayav midoraisa to put on tzitzis, and therefore you are mekayim mitzvah d'oraisa if you put on tzitzis. Cotton is not wool. Cotton is a different material. It's machlokas rishonim and a machlokas achronim, whether it's mitzvah d'oraisa or mitzvah d'rabbanan to put tzitzis on cotton. So if you wear cotton, you're still chayav to put tzitzis on, but according to some, it might be kim d'rabbanan, not kim d'oraisa. So that's why some prefer to wear wool tzitzis, so that they are for sure getting a mitzvah d'oraisa fulfilled, whereas cotton is only mitzvah d'rabbanan, according to some poskim, according to some rishonim. Mesh, by that you refer to synthetic material, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
So synthetic material is a question altogether that's chayav in tzitzis or not. The Gemara says that wearing a leather beged is not chayav in tzitzis. There's machlokas contemporary poskim, Moshe Feinstein versus Shmuel Vosner. If you wear synthetic materials, such as nylon, so that most likely is like ore, is like leather. The question is, if you have a woven material made from synthetic materials, is that chayv and tzitzis or not? Midoraisa. Shmuel Vosner says it's chayv if you have a woven synthetic material. Rav Moshe writes that it's not chayav midoraisa, it's woven synthetic material, still like ore, still like leather. Mesh, I assume, is what? Is woven synthetic material? What is it? It's the net-like stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Stuff. Right. So if it's not woven in a, you know, crisscross fashion, then it's not chayav midaraisa. It would at most be only a derabbanan requirement. Whereas if it's woven in a crisscross warp woof weaving fashion, that would be machlokas of Vosner and of Moshe, what's chayav midaraisa or not. Yes.
What do you recommend people do when they go to the workforce in terms of talking to the
Good question. As you might have noticed, I personally follow the opinions. I personally follow the opinion of Ravan Soloveitchik, Zatzal, and his approach to Tzitzisin in general. So I might not be the best person to ask in that regard. But assuming that you follow the stock of those posting hold towards Tzitzis out all the time, in the workforce there are the following considerations. On the one hand, if you really think that you'd be subject to mockery or discrimination because of your tzitzis, there certainly is allowance in poskim to wear tzitzis in. Mitzad sheni, I don't see how wearing a yarmulke is going to be any different. Meaning, hopefully you're wearing a yarmulke in the workforce. Especially nowadays, it is, I think, far more common than it was 50 years ago, 40 years ago. People wear yarmulkes in the workforce, and by that same notion, tzitzis might be the same idea. Certainly would be perhaps even beneficial to you to have a constant reminder that you are different in the workforce, where the pressures to conform are great and difficult. If your face doesn't look professional and you want to look more tucked in, then if you're minting it towards its out, then wear them around the belt, or just wear them a little bit sticking out by your waist. So you see them, they're wrapped tightly around the belt, it's very neat looking, it's very professional still looking, but you still see them out when you sit down, you'll take notice of them. It's probably the best approach. If you're minting it towards its out, then tuck them around your belt so it doesn't flap around, you don't give an unkempt appearance off to those in the workforce. That's probably the best advice. Right here? Yes?
So I didn't understand, how does Rav Eliyashiv's position counter Rav Schechter, that what's the harm in it?
What's the harm in it? So I think Rav Eliyashiv said that, number one, you're saying even with Machlokas Rashi Rambam, you're saying how to boil up the tchelis dye.
So it's
saying if you do the wrong way, it's like one shita, not the other, so what's wrong with it? There's no negative there. But Soloveitchik also does quote the notion that tzitzis should be white, which means unless you're doing real tchelis, they should always be white. So if you don't have the right approach to tchelis, then you might not be wearing real tchelis, in which case you'll be in violation of the minhag to have white tzitzis. So like I mentioned before, there's a Shulchan Aruch that says that the chutzim should be the same color as the bege. Eliyashiv quotes a Prima Gadam, who quotes a Zohar, that Levushe Kitlag Fiver, that God's beged, referring to the talus that God wraps himself in, kebiyochol, is white. So there is a preference to white, unless you daf wearing tchelis. Since we don't know how to tchelis perfectly, so Eliyashiv says therefore we should wear white. So, yes?
We assume that tchelet are lighter blue. Why the stripe on our talitot and talitot in general are more black?
Black?
Yeah.
Okay, good question. I believe I've heard that the Gemara says that the Chelis is domal the rakia, rakia domal the kisei kavod, and the stripe is supposed to remind yourself of the chelis. Some places are blue, but the gentleman goes to have it with black stripes. The pshat that I heard once, and I don't recall my makomas for this, is that the difference in the sky during the day and sky at night. Sky during the day is blue, sky at night is more darker, blacker. That might be where the difference comes from, but often I can't cite you any chapter and verse.
Presumably
the tchelis itself is dark corner that approach, yeah. And again, I don't know, I doubt it was black, but right. Might be where that black strap comes from. Okay, Chavirin, thank you so much.
Okay. Period of time, one, to me, anyone want to special over